Colonel Temple, Reel 5.
Yep. We were able to read the Shanghai news, which we did out of, out of boredom almost. And also, there were six books that were given to us to read, that is, the two or more hundred people that there were there. So obviously, there was a bit of a queue to read them. Now, the OK authors were Dickens and Tolstoy. And and one more, Maxim Gorky, Maxim Gorky's mother. I read that, but I nearly died of boredom even reading there. And my turn came round for Tolstoy's War and Peace. Well, what was the arrangement was that you had to read it absolutely non-stop. And in fact, I can recommend this as a very good way of reading. I completed War and Peace in something under 36 hours, which is, if you think about it, is unusual to say the least. Most people take a month, I think, to read War and Peace. But it is a way to read it. I never did read any Dickens. I've never been one of his fans, so I never got in the queue for that. I think it was something, it was one of those ones of talking about the terrible life that the working classes had in Victorian England. And I think we were depressed enough without that to go on with. Well, anyway, at this point, one, you know, life was quite livable and we were back to a reasonable state of health. I mean, we had our own doctors at this stage, but of course they had no medicine. But somehow people managed to live quite easily. One could have gone on living in that way for quite a length of time. In fact, in that last year, I don't think anybody died at all. Whereas before the last year, there had been a large number who died, mostly American. Okay, the winter came and went. We even got really to the point of playing basketball. I don't mean basketball, I mean volleyball and baseball, which are all both games that you can do with the minimum of kit. And that kept us gradually, we all got fitter and fitter, fine. And even to the extent of having paper for people to write on, and Tony Farrar Hockley, he wrote a show, which we put on. I was a gentleman of the chorus, and I can remember most of the songs. It was a sort of Edwardian type show. It got a bit amusing. I was also responsible for making some of the props together with Randall Cook. And the props included making wood. We were given a saw, a cross-cut saw, two-handled cross-cut saw, and with this we were given some trunks, tree trunks, and we solemnly sawed these down the grain with a cross-cut to make bits for our stage scenery. Stage scenery was, of course, Shanghai News glued together with rice glue and then painted with some colours somehow. And the framework were these bits of wood that we had got together by sawing for hours on end to get wood. Now, yes, at this point, somewhere in that summer, the last summer, that's the summer of 53, I was told that about a code that had been arranged. Oh, we did start to get letters at this point, yes, and were allowed to write letters out. I, in fact, never got any letters from my parents, but I did get a letter from a mother of another Gloucester officer. He did not get any. Anyway, during these letters that we sent out, we were told, it was arranged with Tony Farrell Hocklin and Dennis Harding, a coded version with a view to escape. And back came the replies, again in code. This was all done by the War Office. And just before we were released, it was the plan that a New Zealand Air Force pilot, sergeant pilot, called Vance Drummond, and I would make another attempt to escape. And apparently there were friendly forces, which these days would be called sort of SAS, sitting on a hill not far away. Well, this had just been arranged when peace was declared, and we started on our journey down to Panmunjom. At Panmunjom, we all thought, ah, this is good, we're going to be released straight away. Not a bit of it. And the release was on the basis of those who were the least reactionary, as they call it, meaning those who'd given them trouble, were kept to the end. So I find myself with coming out finally September the 3rd with Colonel Kahn, Tony Farrell Hockley and others. But we were very much left to the end. And that is how I came out. And I must say, coming out was a remarkable experience. There was this British military police sergeant, and I saw him. He was suddenly, you realized that you were out when you saw a British military police sergeant. And he was kissed by, oh, I think a dozen soldiers, just like that, to his immense surprise. And after that, yes, that night in Panmunjom, we saw the film of the coronation, and we coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. And it was at that point we really realised what we'd all been fighting for, what the values, British values, were. And there I was, sitting between an Australian, who, would you believe it, his name was Bruce Thompson, and this sergeant pilot, Vance Drummond, from New Zealand. And there we all were with them, tears streaming down our eyes at seeing that thing, and we realized, you know, what everything was about in the world that we had been out of for a while. We had a medical inspection, which didn't amount to very much, and then went to Japan by air. Had another medical inspection, which again amounted to almost nothing. Yeah, feeling all right? Good. That's all right. And we went off and had a party straight away. And whereas the Americans, they were sort of, all of them, put in a hospital and sort of wrapped in cotton wool and this and that. A totally different approach.
Why did you insist on trying to escape so often in view of the bad consequences for you?
Oh. Well, the first time I escaped, in fact, the consequences weren't too bad. If you remember, I said I actually got really quite a good meal after the first time. No problem at all. The second time, yes, there were bad consequences. But I still thought we were, that was our duty, so to escape. I mean, one did know that it was our duty to escape. Funnily enough, there were those who thought it was their duty to cause the Chinese as much trouble as they possibly could so that they could have to bring in more guards. But, you know, when you're, what do a few more guards do in a population of Chinese, it actually means nothing at all when they're whatever number of population they were. I think they were over a billion then, so nothing, of no account. Well, that was the view I took. So one had to make up one's mind whether one was going to escape or make a nuisance of yourself. If you made a nuisance of yourself, you were a marked man, and it was pretty difficult to escape, particularly as, of course, Americans, our friends, would tell the Chinese, one or two of them, that there was a chap. So when you thought about escaping, it had to be done secretly, quietly, and without anybody knowing about it. And particularly, that was the reason why I was selected to go with Vance Drummond, who didn't live in the same area as I did, and we weren't that close to each other, and so nobody could have put us together and said, oh, watch those two, they're going to escape. The problem, of course, of escaping was that there was no food on the ground except in the month of July, where the sweet corn grew, and it was then sufficiently ripe for you to eat while it was green and before it went yellow and hard during harvest time. So the time to go was very, very limited, just the month of July.
How did you know these Americans were informing on your escape attempts?
I'm glad you asked that question. They didn't inform on my escape attempts, but one got the impression that they were giving the information of all that went on inside the camp to the people, to the Chinese in authority there.
To get some favours?
Yep.
Did your POW experience leave you with different opinions about either communism or the Chinese?
No. It didn't. The Chinese were pretty much what I expected them to be. The only thing that surprised me about China was that one's heard that thing about all the tea in China, and we came to the conclusion there was no tea in China because we never saw tea. All we saw was hot water and Goliang for the most part, but we never saw any tea. As for communism, don't forget, we were all quite young and we didn't know an awful lot about communism. And let's face it, we were much more, what were we then? Completely different. I think although we were, in our early 20s, we hadn't been brought up in the ways of the world like today's young people are. We weren't so worldly wise, actually. And we just knew that Britain was right and Britain was the best, and that was that, really.
How long did it take you to fully recover, or did you not fully recover physically and mentally?
I think almost no time at all, really. It's hard to say. In many ways, we were recovered within about 3 days, but in other ways, we weren't, because we found when we got back amongst our parents and family and so on, that we found we could not easily talk to them. And nobody understood, as we said. And in fact, I could not sit down to a meal without sort of walking up and getting up and going away.
Was that because you felt that people were taking things for granted, which...
No, it wasn't like that. It was just plain unsettled, feeling totally unsettled. I could not sit down for longer than about a minute at a time. without having to get up, come back, sit down, have a cigarette, and start again.
What do you think to this fashion that we have nowadays for people being counselled under circumstances like that?
Yes, it's always amused me. I can't think what it consists of. This didn't take very long, but to get over that performance, I suppose about 2 months. But I think we all found we were slightly irritated by people who said, "Oh well, I suppose you got plenty of Red Cross parcels and things like that." That we found a touch irritating. In fact, one of the few people who made any sensible comment at all was when I went to Buckingham Palace to get my MC. The Queen Mother was doing the investiture, and she was one of the few people who made good, common sense conversation. I thought she was wonderful, quite wonderful.